HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 257, recorded live Thursday, March 17th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Jim Evans about Selenium for web automation testing.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I am talking to Jim Evans from the Selenium Web Application Testing System. How's it going, Jim?
Pretty well. How are you?
Very well, very well. Thanks for coming on and talking to me about this. I use Selenium, I want to say 2004, 2005. It was a long time ago. I actually thought it was like 10 years, but then I realized that on the internet, 5 years is basically 10 years. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, the project's been around for a long time. We're working on some real innovations or some real improvements of the system right now. The Selenium 1 project has been out for Selenium 1.0, the 1.0 version has been out for about a year or so after an extended beta period. And right now we're working on the 2.0 release, which combines a lot of different elements and is in beta right now.
Mm-hmm. And when this started, this was a thought worker type thing. I think it was Jason Huggins that started thinking about this in terms of a test runner that would use JavaScript for the testing. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. It was Jason Huggins who started the whole thing back at ThoughtWorks and moved on to Google eventually and other things and kind of took the concept of the project with him, worked on a Selenium team inside of Google, and has since moved on to other things. But it was a ThoughtWorks project. Of course, it's been open sourced, and it is an open source project, and that's where we are today.
So let's start where I think many people saw Selenium first, myself included, and then kind of work our way through it. When I saw it originally, it was basically all in the browser, and it almost made it look like it chopped up your browser into frames. So you'd have your web application, and then you'd have like a runner across the top, and you'd write your tests using effectively tables, HTML tables, and kind of describe what you wanted done.
Right. That was the original concept and the original implementation of the Selenium project. Then a couple of years later, I believe it was Patrick Lightbody and others who worked on separating that out to create what eventually became known as Selenium Remote Control or Selenium RC, which abstracted out those tabled commands into a language. Basically, you could write them using any language you wanted to, being C# or Ruby or Java or Python or any number of programming languages. If there was a way to export it into that programming language, you could use it there. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the one that a lot of people have used since then. The big difference there is that there is a Java server that was created that essentially stood in as a proxy that you would talk to that would then drive the browsers using that JavaScript framework.
This was more advanced than that initial HTML table format.
Absolutely, yeah. And it also, of course, using that, it gave you the advantages of running in a traditional programming language so that you could take advantage of things like, a unit test runner or a unit test framework to run your tests. You could, take advantage of reusable code and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one of the things that's interesting about Selenium that I, in my opinion, may have is both a strength and a weakness, at least in as far as adoption amongst like Windows and .NET people, is that when you hear that, oh, well, the remote control server is in Java, there might be managers or bosses or opinionated people who might say, well, I don't want any part of that. That's just not what we do here. But they don't realize that they can be writing in Java or Python or .NET or PHP or whatever.
Exactly.
When they're doing their tests.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that brings us to the Selenium 2 project, which in a parallel effort, there's a gentleman named Simon Stewart who worked on a competing project inside Google called WebDriver. And the WebDriver project took a completely different approach to driving the browser. And we'll get into more of the, of exactly how that works in a little bit. But, as, the Selenium folks and the WebDriver folks, began to talk together, it became pretty obvious that, the project should merge. And so they did. And so now Selenium 2 is the merging of the traditional Selenium project with the WebDriver project. So the Selenium, so if you can think of the Selenium brand, so to speak, if you will, is a little bit like, to draw an analogy, would be a little bit like the Mac OS brand. The remote control or RC in Selenium 1 would be a little like the Carbon UI framework, and the WebDriver API would be a little like the Cocoa framework, the newer, more capable framework. To draw a .NET analogy, it might be like .NET UI types, where the Selenium 1 or Selenium RC framework would be a little like Windows Forms, and the WebDriver API would be a little bit like WPF.
So let's start for let's assume that people have never done anything with Selenium. Where do I start? And let's assume that I want to test my web application. I've got an existing web application written in whatever. Maybe I wrote it in .NET, and I need to enter in some text, I need to submit a form, and I need to confirm that that actually happened. What's the general way that I would go about doing that?
Well, using the Selenium 2 API, what you would do is you would download, if you were, whatever language you're using, the way Selenium 2 works, let me back up a little bit before we get to that straight example, and explain that the Selenium 2 or the WebDriver approach takes basically a best fit approach for how to, in Tampa, Florida. For example, to drive IE, we use the COM automation API to drive IE. For Firefox, we use a Firefox extension and talk to the Firefox extension to drive Firefox, and so on. So we do these in a language-independent way. The COM automation part in IE is written in C++. The Firefox extension is written in JavaScript and with an HTML page and so on. And so what we have is we have different language bindings that talk to those language independent ways or those language independent pieces. So you can use C Sharp, Python, Ruby, Java to write your test cases in and write to the WebDriver or the Selenium 2 API. We kind of use those terms interchangeably. And write to those in the API that is idiomatic of your language. So what you would do then in order to perform the test that you were talking about, you would, in the .NET case, you would download the assemblies, the zip file. We don't have a NuGet package yet. But you would download the zip file, unzip it, add references to the WebDriver or the Selenium assemblies into your test project, and in Visual Studio, start writing your tests where you would instantiate IE, navigate to the page, and find the element on the page and interact with it.
Do I have the remote Selenium remote control application running to automate IE, or does this the assembly just do it automatically?
Yeah, for the new API does not require the Selenium server anymore. That was another advance in the use of the Selenium 2 project and the merger with the WebDriver API. The WebDriver technology simply works with the browser. It drives the browser directly. It doesn't require the Java server in the middle anymore.
And can I write the same code in C Sharp or whatever, like I said, idiomatic to my language, and I can run Safari?
Safari support is a little bit lagging right now. We're working on that. That's one of the active things that we're working on for the Selenium 2 API. One of the things that you can do, and one of the ways that we're trying to help people migrate from, because we have a lot of people who have a very large investment in Selenium 1 test cases. It's been around for a long time, as you mentioned. And there are lots and lots of people who have lots and lots of test cases written with Selenium 1. So one of the ways that we are helping people to migrate is that one of the things that we have is a WebDriver backed Selenium, which lets people use the Selenium commands, but use the WebDriver backend. So it's WebDriver, the WebDriver API that's actually driving the browsers. But your test cases don't have to change. So that helps you migrate from one to the other. Now, in the case of the Java language bindings, we have a Selenium-backed WebDriver. So it goes the other way, which allows you to continue to do things like Safari testing until we can get the Safari driver completed.
Okay. So I wonder if we may have confused people, because some people may have jumped in and looked at Selenium like I did years ago and mm-hmm. think of it, Selenium 1, as a way to write tests that automate your browser in HTML tables, where you have a table for a verb and a table for the noun you're referring to and a table for the, you know, a column for the expected result, rather. And those are what we call Selenium 1 tests. Is that correct?
Well, those are typically referred to as Selenese tests or the Selenese model. Yeah, it's kind of really a DSL or domain specific language that is related to testing web applications, and it can be expressed in HTML tables, or it can also be expressed in a programming language, as it is in the Selenium RC API or Selenium 1 API. There's pretty close to a one-to-one mapping between the commands that you would find in the table and the commands or the methods on the Selenium object. If you're talking in the .NET version, the methods on the Selenium object pretty much map one-to-one to the commands in the HTML language, if you will.
All right, that's where I was actually going with that. So the one that people may have seen of the HTML, they've seen it years ago, like I did. It's basically a DSL, but it's effectively expressing the same exact thing. So I've got lots of choices. I can use pretty much any language, you know, in the style of the language I choose, be it Ruby or C# or HTML tables, and that will be expressed and interpreted, and then put my browser kind of on puppet strings.
If you're using the Selenium 1 API, yes. Now the Selenium 2 API is vastly different. It's much more of an object-oriented API. I find it to be much more elegant and much more expressive than the traditional Selenium 1 API. There is a driver object that refers to the browser itself, which has properties and methods of things like, go to URL, or in the case of the .NET, it's a URL property that's both settable and gettable. If you set it, it navigates the browser to that URL. Off of the web driver object, you have a find element or find elements method, which would find you a web element, which is a collection of web elements. And those elements have properties and methods of things like, for example, click, clear, submit, send keys, things of that nature. So, like I said, it's a much more, if you're a .NET programmer or a Java programmer, it's much more natural to work in something that has this kind of API.
Mm-hmm. So this was a significant direction change for you guys.
This is a significant direction change.
Yeah, but it sounds like it definitely adds something that is worthwhile to take the hit that you're going to have to take.
Yeah, it's all about making things more maintainable, making things a little bit more natural feeling to the natural feeling to the language that you're actually working in.
Mm-hmm. Is that difficult? I mean, I think that it's certainly a admirable thing to say, I want Ruby people to feel good about Ruby and what they're doing while they're writing tests in our world. But is it possible to make something like to use your term, idiomatic?
Yeah, actually it is. And we worked very hard to make it so. Like for example, you know, I'm pretty much responsible for the .NET language bindings, which you know, seem very .NET like. You know, the properties are appropriately Pascal cased, and the you know, if you're looking and using IntelliSense in Visual Studio, you'll see things that look familiar to you or that look natural to you as a C# developer. For example, the Java bindings, for example, you'll find obviously they don't have properties; they have only methods. They are camel cased, like Java libraries are, and so again, it's about providing a very natural feeling API with which to work.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us.
So if we put this in NuGet, which of course, and I'm happy to help you with that too. I'm sure it's just one of those things you're getting around to.
Right.
Someone will be able to literally just say like file new project, bring this down and start writing tests, hit F5, and they've got their browser on a string.
It should be that simple. Yeah.
Now, why would someone want to use this over a competitor? An example competitor would be like the test stuff that you can get in some of the SKUs of Visual Studio, or Water, web application testing in Ruby, or for a .NET person, Watten web application testing in .NET.
Sure. Well, you know, for example, the Water, Let me speak to Water because I probably know that one best. As it happens, you know, Water is kind of starting to work on their 2.0 version, and Yari Bakken, who is a contributor on the Selenium team for Ruby, has actually created a gem called Water WebDriver. Water-WebDriver. And it is the Water API that is backed by the WebDriver technology. And so what you're seeing is a little bit of a convergence of sort of these disparate technologies for browser automation uses building blocks to build other things. Brett Petticord calls it innovating at the API level. If I can quote him, that's
course,
his
Brett,
term.
Brett Petticord, of course, being the primary on Water for people who aren't familiar.
Yes, and so you know he so the Water 2.0 version, I believe, they're still talking about it, but may in fact be the Water WebDriver gem that Yari's done really, really great work on. Watten is not quite as far along, for example, mm-hmm. but there's been some talk in the Watten community of doing the same thing. Because when you talk about doing things like cross-browser automation, why should we have 5 different projects that all attempt to maintain ways of talking to 5 different browsers if we have one that does it pretty well? And provides an API on which you can build on.
Right.
I mean, selenium was sufficiently different from water 5-6 years ago with its use of tables that, you know, one could pick what made them happy. But now, being an idiomatic language that automates the browser, the difference between it and water from a cursory glance is getting more and more difficult to kind of call out.
Yeah, it really is. And really the advantage that water brings, in my opinion, and what in and those types of automation projects bring to the table is their API. Their API is pretty darn elegant. And, it's very user friendly, for developers of tests in the .NET languages in the case of Watt In and the Ruby language in the case of Water. Those APIs are really quite well defined, and so it makes sense to use them. But again, why would the Water project or the Watt In project want to have to manage the mechanics of talking to IE, talking to Firefox, talking to Chrome, talking to Opera, and all of those things, when the WebDriver project could give you the same thing for a relatively small amount of effort.
So help me understand. Maybe I missed it or I'm confused. But who owns WebDriver, and where does that come from as it relates to Selenium? Did that come out of Selenium?
Yeah, WebDriver was a competing project to Selenium, but they had merged. The Selenium project and the WebDriver project have merged, and I use WebDriver colloquially to mean the Selenium 2 API. Like I said, I think I use those terms interchangeably. I probably should get out of the habit of doing that, but the WebDriver API or the Selenium 2 API typically are referring to the same thing.
I see. And are you all friendly? I mean, is there a such thing as like a beef between different groups, or is everyone on the same side just trying to make it easier to test things within a browser?
Well, I think ultimately that's what we all want, is to make things easy. I think there's a great relationship between the Selenium team and the Water team. The Watt In team, we really haven't had much more than a cursory interaction with, but they're nice guys. Mm-hmm. Jaren's a nice guy. I've had the pleasure of talking with him via email, and we've discussed the possibility in a future version of Watt In being based on WebDriver also, but it's been nothing more than, you know, brief conversations at this point.
Mm-hmm. It definitely sounds like only good things could happen though.
Yeah, well, one of the long-term projects of the Selenium 2 or the WebDriver project is kind of to create a browser automation standard. It is crazy that we have, you know, just a small team of developers. Really, there's less than 10 people who are super active in maintaining the Selenium 2 code base. And for that small a team to be trying to support every browser on every platform is really kind of crazy. So one of the things we're starting to do is to reach out to some of the browser vendors themselves to have them produce and maintain their own drivers. There is a WebDriver compliant Chrome driver that is checked in as part of the Chromium tree that should be available with the next version of Chrome, I believe, or real soon now. Opera Corporation has open sourced and released their driver for the Opera browser as well. So, so these are, you know, Mozilla has bought into the concept, is my understanding, but, we haven't gotten as far as having, them generate any code for the project yet. So, but we're trying to sort of help browser vendors to, encourage browser vendors to start thinking about creating their own drivers and making it easier for us to build tools on top of those technologies.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk to the IE9 team, or how does that work out?
Well, we'd love to talk to the IE9 team. I haven't had any contact with them directly outside of I have spoken with one of their developer evangelists, but I haven't spoken with anybody directly on the team to any great length, but I'd love to talk to them. I'd love to figure out if there's something we can do to make that easier. None of the core Selenium developers are super strong C++ programmers. I know I'm not. I've been responsible for the IE driver, the unmanaged code piece, the native code piece, and it's been a challenge to try to make sure I'm doing everything exactly right. So I'd love to have a chat with them.
Cool. I'll try to facilitate a conversation.
That'd be great.
One of the things I think is interesting is when I hit seleniumhq.org, one of the, there's like step zero, step one, step two. And in step one, they say, get the Selenium IDE, which is this Firefox add-in that effectively jumpstarts your experience. It's kind of the gateway drug. Cause, you know, if you basically said step one, open Notepad and type this syntax, that would maybe turn a lot of people off. So you basically sell them on this recorder to get them excited before you encourage them to move away from the recorder and work on the, you know, the things a little more directly. And I'm interested in that because I wrote, I think it was the original water recorder that would basically automate IE and watch what IE did and then write out water, Ruby code. And, you know, it really got people excited about water at the company that I was working at the time, and it kind of jump-started things. But people quickly learned that a recorder can only go so far. I know that there are a lot of strong opinions about that. When I put the water recorder out there, and it actually still lives on, surprisingly, another guy has picked it up. There was a lot of strong feelings like recorders for web testing are a bad idea. And I see a lot of discussion both ways. I know that on the Microsoft side, inside of Visual Studio, there's a recorder as well. What do you think about that idea and where it fits into testing?
Well, I can certainly understand the appeal of a record and playback mechanism, but it's been my experience that record and playback doesn't usually mean record and playback. It usually means record, play it back once, and then fix it when it inevitably breaks. As a method for getting people involved and started with test automation technologies, I can certainly see the benefit in that, but the real benefits of test automation, in my opinion and in my experience, have been once you break free of the stuff that's generated by the record mechanism, and start to work with the raw code that usually is generated by them, in whatever language that generated code is.
So you're for it for jump starting, but kind of little else is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, pretty much. I have pretty much tried to steer away from record and playback tools throughout my career, I try to discourage them whenever I'm working on a project with other testers, I can't slam someone who doesn't know how to code for giving them the ability to write a quick test to be able to point and click. And it can be useful. They can especially be useful for learning an API, for example, if you're recording and want to figure out, well, how do I locate this element in this web page using the API of Selenium or using the API of water, for example. You can look at the code generated by the recorder and say, oh, okay, so that's how I do it. But the important thing to me is to take that knowledge and not continue to use it in the recorder. If you can, let's write the script, as code directly.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other things that I thought was really interesting about Selenium is this notion of this grid. Because the initial complaint that people get when they start doing browser automation testing is, I have lots of different kinds of browsers I want to test on, and they basically start by trying to make their own computer do everything. They install every browser, and they try to get multiple versions running side by side, and they kind of struggle to get a breadth of tests. And then, of course, those tests are slow because you can only drive a browser so fast. And then they start kind of, it's almost like the multiple stages of grief as you work through this process in your head. Some people try to get tests running without the browser, and then they kind of realize, well, that won't tell me how the browser is going to behave. What does the grid do, and how does that make my life easier?
Well, what the Selenium grid does, and we're currently working on the next version of the Selenium grid as well. There's been some code that's just recently been checked into the project to advance the Selenium grid into the Selenium 2 world. What it does is it allows you to take a number of machines and running a Selenium agent or a Selenium server is probably the technically correct word, coordinate execution of tests among those many machines, each one having a server or an agent on it, and then reporting the results back into the grid. The grid controller, that is.
Is this almost like building, like making a build farm? I mean, are these machines that, are these my friend's machines, or am I going to dedicate machines to the grid?
Well, you could approach it either way. You could approach it in such a way there was one project that I worked on where we had everyone enrolled in the project, and they ran the agent on their machines at the end of the day, and we used their machines as test machine resources overnight. Typically what you would want to do is you would have machines dedicated to running tests, and they don't have to be physical machines. They could very easily be virtual machines as well.
Ah, interesting. So having I could have a single machine just filled with different virtual machines in order to get around the versioning issue, as well as, I assume, Macs and other kinds of machines. And you basically just kind of call upon them. You request like a web farm. I need a Mac Firefox instance, and it figures it out and runs it and then reports back.
Right. In the Selenium 2 API, we have the concept of a capabilities object, which we can basically find out what the capabilities are of a given browser that we've instantiated, so that we can know whether, say, for example, it supports JavaScript, or whether it's whether you need to use native events from the OS to do your mouse clicks and keystrokes, or whether we're using synthetic ones, things mm-hmm. of that nature. So yes, we you know, essentially that's what you would be using the grid for.
Mm-hmm. And then my last question is, there are a number of people, myself included, who started with basic browser testing early on and then gave up a couple of years ago when apps started becoming very, Ajax-y, and kind of said, well, I guess it's just really hard to test applications that have lots of interactions and crazy Ajax and jQuery type stuff. Mm-hmm. Does Selenium do anything special to make that easier?
Well, we do have there are some techniques that you can use, but you would want to use them probably no matter what technology you'd be using, whether it's Selenium or something else. Some of the techniques include things like you would do things like one of the common things is I have an Ajax page that when the Ajax request comes back, it then populates with some elements on the page. You know, I get some links populated on the page or whatever, and I want to be able to not have to interact with the page until this particular link shows up, for example. So one of the techniques that you would use is you would essentially poll the page for waiting for that to come back and waiting for that element to exist on the page. And so that's essentially one of the techniques that you would use. And there are some helper classes and helper methods in the Selenium project that make that a little bit easier to work with. The Selenium 1 API also has some direct things that are things like wait until present, wait until text, I believe is the name of it. Or wait until contains text, page contains text. I've forgotten exactly the names of those. But the techniques are similar. In the Selenium 2 API, you would essentially want to poll for the condition that you want. And like I said, there are some helper methods that make constructing those wait functions a little easier.
Cool. So is seleniumhq.org the place that people can go to find out pretty much everything, all things Selenium?
Yeah, we're in the middle of a little bit of a revamp of that because we are updating the documentation for the Selenium 2.0 project. The 2.0 beta 3 is imminent for sure exactly when we're going to when it's going to be available. The other place that they can go if they're interested looking at the project itself is going to be at selenium.googlecode.com. And that's the project hosting page for the source code. Also has the issue tracker and so on.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that. It sounds like it's great to know that it's still around. I keep bringing up the age of it because I think that a lot of times people look at older projects with a kind of combination of reverence, but at the same time, well, I guess it's done. And it sounds like you guys are just getting started.
No, it's extremely active, and we're always looking for contributors and people who want to come and help out. So, you know, come visit us at selenium.googlecode.com and ping us on the mailing lists and IRC channels, and all the links are up there. So,
very cool. All right, well, thanks so much. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.